Chapter 9. Getting Down to Brass Tacks. I've been trading since the late 1970s. Over the years, I specialized in the futures markets, especially the S&P and the DAX futures. But I've traded just about everything at one time or another. In addition to futures, I've traded stocks, bonds, mutual funds, gold, oil, other commodities, options, currencies, and almost anything else that is tradable. In this section, I share the basic steps I take when I trade these securities. After each section, I give you the checklist that I use to make my trading decisions. I believe that an understanding of the S&P futures is extremely helpful in trading a variety of securities. I use it to help me trade stocks, mutual funds, bonds, and other things. In law school, I learned a simple approach to analyzing issues and determining whether to be for or against a given proposition. As soon as I read the final examination question, I began my analysis by drawing a large capital T on my worksheet. On the left side of the T, I listed the reasons that I should favor a given proposition, and on the right side, I listed the reasons that argued against it. Then I weighed and analyzed the two positions and decided whether to be ultimately for or against the proposition in question. Many people use the T-square approach to decision-making within the business setting. I suggest that you use it for trading. When determining how I will trade, I form a T, and on one side I list the reasons for going short, and on the other side I list the reasons for going long. I have done this for so many years that I do not always write the factors down, but I always mentally go through the process. If there are as many reasons for going long as there are for going short, I just sit on my hands and stay out of the market. Now let's go through some major markets and let me explain the method to my madness. Rarely a day goes by that I do not trade the S&P, DAX, Dow, or NASDAQ index futures. I believe that regardless of the security you trade, it's important to understand the futures markets because they are often accurate predictors of general market direction. Obviously, my first trading decision must be to select an index to trade. If the broader market appears to be particularly bearish and one of the markets seems to be weaker than the others, I trade that market. The chances are that it will be the first one to go down. Conversely, if the general market is very bullish and the S&P or Dow seems more bullish than the other futures markets, I will favor them. Always try to choose the leader of the pack and join it. Secondly, I generally trade specific indices at certain times. As a rule, I generally do not trade the Dow until after 9:30 a.m. I have found that it takes the Dow a couple of hours to decide where it's going. I want to let it make up its mind before I enter the fray. There may be exceptions, but generally, that's what I do. If I trade the S&P, I usually do so from 9 a.m. until 10:15 a.m., or after lunch at 1 p.m. or 2:30 p.m. Again, experience taught me that these are the best times during the day for me to trade in this market. I enjoy trading the DAX during the early morning hours. It opens at 2 a.m., and I trade it around 3:30 a.m., 6 a.m., or when I'm trading the S&P. Remember that trading is an art. There is no absolute law. But this is my rule of thumb. After many hours of trading, I have identified specific times that I generally prefer certain markets. Put the current market in context. You cannot trade unless you put the market in context. Is the broad market bullish or bearish? I use the annual trend line, previously discussed, to answer this question. If we are currently trading above the yearly open, I put a plus mark on the long side of my T. That is one factor favoring a long position. If we are currently trading below the yearly open, the plus sign goes on the short side of the T. I also look at the monthly open. Are we above it? If so, a mark goes on the long side. If it is below the monthly open, the short side scores a point. Next, I look closely at the current market. I begin gathering some numbers. I want to know the high and low of yesterday's trading. I look at the S&P futures to get this information. I also want to know yesterday's 12:30 p.m. number. How did the S&P futures trade during the night session? What was the high and what was the low during the Globex trading? There are two other numbers that I gather. I get the DAX 6 a.m. price and the S&P 3:30 a.m. price. Then I record all of these numbers and study them. Is the S&P currently trading above yesterday's close? Score 1 for the bulls. What about yesterday's 12:30 p.m. trading? Are we below it? Put a mark in the bears' favor. I go through the numbers on my worksheet and weigh them. Are the bulls or the bears showing strength? Gather key numbers. As trading progresses, I look at the day's numbers. Where did the S&P open? Are we staying above or below the open? I look at the 30-minute bar charts. Is a bullish or a bearish pattern depicted? In relation to the last 30-minute bar, are we above or below it? By how much? I consider all of these numbers and tally the bullish points and compare those to the bearish points. Is one side winning the battle? If so, I look to join that team. Where is my point of entry? I look at my key numbers to make that decision. Where is the market exerting support? Where is it drawing resistance? I use my 30-minute bar charts, historical key numbers, and important trading prices like the daily open and yesterday's close to help me identify the key numbers that I should note. If I'm buying the market, I place my buy stop just above the next identified level of resistance. I know that if the market is strong enough to break through that resistance, there is a good chance that it will move to the next resistance level. Likewise, if I'm selling the market, I place my sell stop just below support. After support is broken, I know that the odds are good that the market will move down to challenge the next support level. What time is it? Time is another major consideration. I want to trade during trade zones or during times when the market is apt to pay me. I don't like the sit-and-wait game. Time is so important that I devote Chapter 2 to it exclusively. Ideally, I get into the market and I get out of it quickly with some profits. I may stay in for a while with part of my position, but I do not want to be a sitting duck for the big boys. That is why time is so important to me. What do the indicators say? In addition to the numbers and the time, I look at the indicators. I explained previously the ones that I like to use. If I'm buying the market, I want all major indicators to be positive. I like the New York Stock Exchange issues to be at a healthy plus 500, and the NASDAQ issues to be in a similarly bullish mode. I also want the tick to be in a positive position. Preferably, I want to see numbers higher than 300. I also look at the T-tick, my personal indicator. If the T-tick is a positive 10 or higher, I know that there is strength in the current market. I do not know how long the bulls will be charging forward, so I want to take advantage of the move and get in and out with some quick profits. I also look at volume indicators. I prefer the V factor that I designed, but use the one of your choice. As volume increases, note how the market responds. Is there strength in the move that I identified? As I consider the numbers, each of my key indicators, and the time of day, I am making checks on the appropriate side of my big T. If there is a T-tick reading of plus 11, it scores a plus on the buy side of the equation. Likewise, a negative 13 on the T-tick gets a check on the sell side. I consider how things are stacking up. Confirmation. Once I am able to identify a market position, I look for confirmation or denial. I do this by looking at other markets. If I'm trading the S&P, I look at the DAX and the Dow. What are they doing? If I'm planning on buying the market, I want the other futures indexes to be bullish also. I identify the points of support and resistance in these markets and watch them closely. I want the DAX and the Dow futures to support the position that I am taking, and also break through resistance. I definitely do not want to see them fall and break support. If that happens, I know my long position is in trouble, and I respond accordingly. Obviously, you do not have time to check every number and every indicator. Check the ones that are most important, and consider what they're telling you. Then decide whether to be long, short, or out of the market. If you're not sure, stay out. The markets are dynamic, and there will be plenty of opportunities to trade. Err on the side of caution and constantly work on risk management. Remember that if you control the risks, the rewards will come. Is there news? Finally, before I click my mouse, I check for scheduled news events. I never begin my morning without knowing which financial reports will be released. Regularly scheduled news events are very important. If a major report is scheduled for 9 a.m., I sit on the sidelines. I do not get into the market until the news is broadcast, is over, and the market has a few minutes to digest it. I follow that same procedure any time that potentially market-moving news is being released. Breaking news cannot be controlled, but scheduled news can be. Generally, within 5 minutes or so after a scheduled report is released, the market reacts and then it quickly settles back down. At that time, it is easier for me to determine the mindset of Wall Street and to decide what to do. Clicking the mouse. Once I determine that the time and price are right, I am ready to place my trade. I explained my trading style in Chapter 6, so I just remind you of it here. I use a simple three-step approach that I named the three T's of trading. This approach helps me balance fear and greed, and also allows me to maximize profits while minimizing risks. I trade in increments of three and take profits at various levels. I make only a few ticks on the first portion of what I liquidate, and refer to this part of the trade as the tick. Ideally, I try to liquidate a third with a small profit. On the S&P futures, I try to get 0.75 points. On the Dow futures, my goal is 3 points. On the DAX, 1.5 points. And on the NASDAQ, 1.5 points. Next, I trade the next one-third or so of my positions. My goal during this portion of the trade is 1.5 to 2.0 points on the S&P futures, 6 to 8 points on the Dow futures, 3 to 5 points on the DAX futures, and 5 points on the NASDAQ futures. If the market shifts quickly or the indicators signal danger, it may be necessary to liquidate more than one-third of the contracts during the tick or the trade portions of the transaction. Always watch the market indicators and read the tape in order to react appropriately. I never risk more than one-third of the average true range of the market or index that I'm trading. Once I have successfully liquidated the first two-thirds of my positions, I move my stop to a break-even position and evaluate. I can use this final portion of my trade to follow the daily trend. I may want to hold the position all day, or I may identify the next point of heavy support or resistance and liquidate my holdings at that time. At any rate, I move my stop to a point where I will not lose on the trade. With some luck and some skill, I may be able to hold the position until the market closes and maximize profits. So that, in a nutshell, is my procedure for trading the index futures. It revolves around key numbers, time of day, and market indicators. I constantly review the numbers and consider the context of the current market. I am not always right, and you will not be either. The big trick is to manage your risk. When you're wrong, you do not want to sink the ship. Focus on keeping losses low and wins high. It takes experience to do that, so start slowly and work on reducing risks. A copy of my morning worksheet is included in the chapter, Figure 9.2. I teach my students to complete this worksheet each day before they begin trading. By gathering this information and studying it, you should be better able to analyze the market. Checklist for trading the index futures. 1. Choose a market. 2. Get the big picture. 3. Gather key numbers. 4. Check the time. You want liquidity and volatility. 5. Read your indicators. 6. Get confirmation. 7. Check for news. 8. Click the mouse. Millions of Americans are invested in mutual funds. Most of these individuals leave the trading decisions to the professional money managers hired to oversee the funds. Sometimes this is good, and at other times it is a disaster. Fund balances may fluctuate dramatically, depending upon market conditions. I trade mutual funds, and of course I have a hands-on approach. Here's how I do it. I use a dual strategy. I allocate 80% of my account to more traditional mutual funds, and 20% to index funds that allow me to go both long and short. One example of such a fund is RIDEX. RIDEX funds are specifically designed to allow a day trading approach to account balances. A maximum of 2 trades can be made each day with the RIDEX fund. There are other similar funds. My profit target with mutual funds is 10% to 20%, and the risk I assume is no greater than 5% to 10%. Those are my ideal numbers. Focus on diversification. With mutual funds, I focus on diversification. Because these are longer-term vehicles, I do not put all of my eggs in one basket. Obviously, I look for the funds that I believe will pay me. At the end of each year, I reconcile my accounts and determine what has been good and what needs to be discarded. I close out the losers and keep the winners. At the beginning of each year, I look at the sectors and identify the best performers for the past year. I note the top 10 and eliminate the top 2 of this group. This leaves me with 8 sectors to consider. Remember, I'm allocating 80% of my funds to mutual funds. Therefore, I allocate 10% of my balance to each of the 8 funds. With a $100,000 account, it means that I put $10,000 into each of the 8 accounts. Then, I watch and wait. At the end of the first quarter, I evaluate my position. I take the worst 3 performers and reallocate that money to the best 5 performers. This allocation reduces my risk and puts my assets in the strongest funds that I have. I do this again after the second quarter. But then I eliminate the worst 2 of the funds and reallocate my money into the top 3 performing funds. By the time the second quarter has passed, I've narrowed the search for the best performing funds. Since my goal is to make 10%, once I reach my goal, I must make a decision. Do I stay in the fund and ride it a little longer or get out? If it looks strong enough, I pull out half of my money and lock in 10% on half of my position. If the market looks like it's weakening up, I liquidate my positions and go to the sidelines. Remember the T that I discussed at the beginning of the chapter. As I evaluate each fund quarterly, I am noting only one factor. Is the fund making money or not? And how much is it making in relation to the other funds? My goal is to eliminate the weak funds and hold on to the strong ones. As the third quarter ends, I again evaluate the 3 remaining funds. As before, I eliminate and reallocate. Since I only have 3 funds left, I find the worst performer and reallocate those funds to the top 2 performers. I hold these into the end of the year. Once the next year begins, I start the process all over again. Index funds. You will recall that I only invest 80% of my account balance in these mutual funds, and I reserve 20% to invest in index funds. I invest in index funds in order to hedge my position and to profit from a rising or falling market. My approach to index funds is different from my approach to traditional mutual funds. I begin each year by recording the opening price of the S&P 500 and NASDAQ 100 futures. I calculate a 2.5% deviation up and down from the opens. If either of these levels is achieved, I trade the index funds, either long or short as indicated. I evaluate which index is moving strongest in the direction of the market, and I allocate my money accordingly. For example, if the NASDAQ is leading the market lower, and it is 2.5% down from its yearly open, I allocate 2/3 to 3/4 of my money into the short NASDAQ fund. I put the remainder into the short S&P fund. This allocation allows for a higher rate of return or an offset of the losses in the other mutual funds as the market falls. If the market goes against me, using the previous example, I exit the position when the market goes 2.5% above the yearly open. I do not reverse the position and re-enter the market. I wait until the beginning of the next quarter and begin the deviation process again. If the market is going in my favor, I evaluate at the beginning of the second quarter. I record the open of the second quarter and again calculate a 2.5% deviation above and below the open. If the market moves 2.5% against me, I get out. If it continues to go in my favor, I wait until the beginning of the next quarter and repeat the process again. So that is my approach to trading mutual funds. I diversify and I continuously monitor my funds and evaluate them. I make adjustments quarterly as needed to stay in the highest performers and get out of the losers. Checklist for trading mutual funds. 1. Identify the top 10 performing mutual funds for the previous year. 2. Eliminate the top 2 performers. 3. Allocate 80% of your account balance to the remaining 8 funds. 4. At the end of the first quarter, close out the worst 3 funds. Allocate that money to the top 5 of your remaining funds. 5. At the end of the second quarter, reallocate. Close the worst 2 funds and add those monies to the top 3 funds. 6. My profit goal is 10% on any given fund. If I have achieved that goal at the end of the second quarter, I either close out the fund profitably or exit half of my funds out to lock in the 10% profit. 7. At the end of the third quarter, I eliminate the worst performer of my remaining 3 funds and ride my remaining funds to year's end. 8. At the end of the year, I go to cash and evaluate. When the new year starts, I start the process again. There are many ways to maximize a trading day while trading the S&P index futures. One way is to trade stocks with price action that closely correlates to the S&P. Of course, stocks are equities and the S&P futures are commodities. Therefore, they require two different accounts and are traded at different exchanges. Both may be traded electronically, but require different margin requirements as well as different rules and regulations. The commission structures are also generally quite different. I trade stocks for both the longer-term investing and for short-term day trading. At the start of each year, I identify 10 high-performing stocks. Trading stocks. There are thousands of stocks to trade. I look for those that will trade best with the S&P 500, the Dow 30 Industrial Average, and the NASDAQ 100. Once I select my stocks, I study them. That does not mean that I focus on fundamental analysis of earnings, P/E ratios, or cash flow. What it means is that I observe the stock to determine how well its price action lines up with the price action on the S&P 500. Specifically, how does it match up with the S&P during certain times of the day and year? Some stocks mirror the S&P 500 very closely, whereas others follow the same trend but tend to have rallies or corrections during specific times of the day session. I want to know this information before I trade the stock, so I watch and learn. Before you trade a stock, observe it for at least a week and do not put on a large position until you probe it and feel comfortable trading it. 3 of the 10 stocks that I always trade include the Q's, the Diamond, and the Spider. These are actually stocks that are much like a mutual index fund. The Q's is an index stock for the NASDAQ 100. The Diamond is the same but consists of Dow stock, and the Spider is S&P stock. By identifying the support and resistance levels of the indices, you learn a great deal about the stocks. When the S&P breaks resistance, you can buy the Spider and trade it simultaneously, or conversely, sell the Spider if support is broken. I especially like to trade the Q's. For every 10 points of trading in the NASDAQ, the Q's will generally move about 0.25 points in the same direction. For example, if the NASDAQ futures sell off from 1543 even to 1513, that is a 30-point drop, and the Q's will probably sell off approximately 0.75, figure 9.3. On 1,000 shares, that is a profit of about $750. Index stocks have two main advantages over common stock. First, there is no uptick rule. With common stock, such as IBM, if a trader were to short sell 100 shares at the market, IBM stock price would have to tick higher in price before the trader could sell the stock short. With the Q's, if a trader shorts the stock at the market, the order is filled immediately and the trader benefits from the whole move. Another advantage of the index stocks is that they are not so news-dependent. It is true that economic news affects the whole market, but individual stocks are more vulnerable. If there is an SEC investigation or poor earnings, an individual stock may drop 10% or more overnight. Index stocks do not have earnings reports and CEOs don't get fired. Therefore, they are not as susceptible to many factors that affect individual stock holdings. I make stock picks on the basis of both the strength of the sector and the historical performance of the stock. Some of the stocks that have consistently been on my list include General Electric, Flowers Industries, Apple, eBay, ExxonMobil, Amazon, Microsoft, IBM, Intel, Walmart, and Adobe. I generally stick with only large caps except for companies listed on the NASDAQ. I want a stock that trades at least 4 million shares a day and has an average true range of $1. This is especially important for day trading because I need the ability to get into and out of the market quickly, and I want the price of the stock to move within a reasonable time so that I can get paid. Sometimes I buy the same stock for both longer-term investing and day trading. In other words, in some cases, I will day trade a stock, but I will also purchase shares for that same company and hang on to them for the long term. Investing in stocks. I begin by identifying 10 high-performing stocks. I note the yearly opening price of these stocks. I follow the stock price and record all of the weekly opens. I do not buy the stock until the price goes above the yearly open. I do not sell the stock until the price goes below the yearly open. Note the correlation between the NASDAQ 100 and the Qs in Figure 9.3. I study daily and weekly charts to identify levels of support and resistance. I do not want to execute a trade until the price of the stock crosses these points. In other words, if a stock is trading above its yearly open and I identify the next resistance point, I wait for resistance to be broken. Then I buy and hold until the next resistance is reached. At least, that is the goal. Likewise, I may short a stock and I follow the same procedure. But of course, I'm looking for support to be broken, and before I short a stock, it must be trading below the yearly open. Once support is broken, I sell and hope to stay short until the next support level is hit, or until I reach my profit target. I use the major futures indices to determine market direction. That is, I look at the S&P, Dow, and NASDAQ to see whether they are heading up or down. For example, I recently relied upon the falling S&P futures to short Research in Motion. I sold at $84 and rode it all the way down to $63. See Figure 9.4. Day trading stocks. As you will recall from the previous section, I identify stocks that have a high correlation to the S&P 500, and those are the stocks I like to trade. IBM historically has a close price correlation as noted in Figure 9.5. As you can see from the pivot charts in Figure 9.5, IBM mirrored the action of the S&P. Knowing this, though there was poor earnings news that sold off IBM 10 points, a trader could have shorted IBM for a longer term while trading the S&P. Short selling IBM once it broke 100 could have yielded 20 points. In other words, 100 shares of IBM short from 100 would have yielded $2,000. While IBM mirrors the S&P, other stocks move in a contrary manner. For example, Coca-Cola Company tends to go down when the S&P goes up, and vice versa. Figure 9.6. Other stocks that move in a contrary direction include Anheuser-Busch. By watching other stocks, you can locate others that correlate closely to the S&P 500 movements, either with the S&P or against it. If I am day trading a stock, I always wait until after the first hour of trading, because it's best to let things settle down. I always trade in increments of 3, just like I do with the futures indexes. I usually transact 3,000 shares. Once in the trade, I exit 2/3 or so of my position with a profit of 30 or 40 cents per share. Then, I pull my protective stop to either a break-even position or the point where my maximum loss on all remaining shares is 20 cents. Then I see how far I can ride. I always know the average true range of each stock because the extent of the ATR is my profit target for the stock for that day. Here's how it works. I purchase 3,000 shares of eBay for $37.20 per share. I set my initial profit target for 30 cents on the 2,000 shares, so I sell 2/3 of my position at $37.50 and make a gross profit of $600. Then I have 1,000 shares remaining. I move my stop to allow for only a 20-cent loss. Even if I lose 20 cents on those shares, I'm still profitable on the trade. Even with a loss on a portion of my positions, I have netted a profit of about $400 after my costs. Time and quantity. My goal, of course, is to make a nice profit on the final 1,000 shares by riding them up to at least the next level of resistance. With some brokers, there is a set fee for consummating a transaction regardless of the number of shares traded. Therefore, you get more bang for your buck if you trade more shares. It is very economical for me to trade 3,000 shares. You can use my method and trade fewer shares, but your costs will go up and your profits down. Unlike the futures indices, there is not an additional charge for holding stocks overnight, and sometimes I hold even my day trading stock overnight. However, if you short a stock, you can only hold it for 3 days before you have to begin paying interest. Also, if there is a dividend while you are shorting the stock, you have to pay the dividend. Remember to control the risk before focusing on profits. When starting to trade stocks, do not start by putting on a full position. In other words, if you eventually want to start trading 1,000 shares of Microsoft because you notice it has large moves in a day, start by trading 100 shares until you become familiar with it. This is the same principle as trading the S&P. Start by trading one E-mini and graduate from there. Once it is understood how it trades and its tendencies, increase your position or even start trading the big S&P. Control the risks and profits will come if you keep working to master your game. Watch for news. Publicly traded stocks must report earnings and other vital information on a regular basis. Be sure that you keep up with the news regarding your stock picks and are not blindsided. Both good and bad news may have a major impact on price. Protective stops. Stops are critical in trading stock as with anything else in the financial markets. When trading stock, the initial stop placement must be above the high of the day if you are short, or below the low if you are long. As the day wears on, stops can be trailed using the roadmap or the 30-minute bar chart. A trader will normally stay in a stock longer than in a futures contract, and therefore stop placement will generally be further back than it would be when trading the futures. Key numbers can also be used for stop placement. Like the S&P, stocks have key numbers. By observing how a stock trades and by looking at 30-minute charts, a trader can determine support and resistance in an individual stock. Again, familiarize yourself with the stock before trading it. Checklist for trading stocks. 1. Identify stocks with price movements that correlate closely to the S&P index futures. 2. As the year begins, identify 10 of these that are high-performing stocks. 3. Record the yearly opening price of each of these stocks. 4. Identify support and resistance levels for each stock. 5. If the major index futures confirm, buy when the price is above the yearly open and resistance has been broken. 6. If the major futures indexes confirm, sell when the price is below the yearly open and support has been broken. Checklist for day trading stocks. 1. Follow the steps listed in the checklist for trading stocks. 2. Do not trade until after the first hour of the session. 3. Watch for news and do not trade until any news settles. 4. Trade in increments of 3. 5. Exit a large portion of your investment, 2/3 to 3/4, with a 30-40 cent profit. 6. Initially place stop for protection as noted previously. After exiting 2/3 to 3/4 of positions, move stop to break even for the remaining shares. I begin preparation for my bond trading strategy when each year begins, but I do not execute a bond transaction until at least the month of April because I observe the price movement for at least 3 months into the year before I step into the market. I trade the 30-year Treasury bonds. I record the yearly opening price, then I record a 3-month moving average of all monthly opens. Before I execute a trade, I want 2 things to happen. I want the current bond price to be above or below the yearly open, and I want the 3-month moving average price to be in agreement with that direction. For example, if the bond price is above the yearly open and it is above the 3-month moving average, I want to be a buyer. If the price is below the yearly opening price and below the 3-month moving average, I want to be a seller. Trading bond futures. Initially, if I am long, my protective stop is below the yearly open and the 3-month moving average by about 10 ticks. If I am short, my stop is above the yearly open and above the 3-month moving average by about 10 ticks. Bonds trade in 32-tick increments. Once I am profitable by about 5%, I move my stock to break even. Then I keep a 5% trailing stop. That is, as the market moves in my direction, I follow it with my stop to lock in my profits. As with all trading vehicles that are discussed in this chapter, before you begin trading them, study and observe. Bonds can be tricky. Learn how they move in relation to equities and the major indexes. Understand the inherent risks and do not focus solely or primarily on profits. Manage risk first. The brief explanation encapsulates my method of trading bond futures. Checklist for trading bond futures. 1. Record yearly opening price. 2. Create a moving average of each month's opening price. 3. Buy if the price is above the yearly open and above the 3-month moving average. 4. Sell if the price is below the yearly open and below the 3-month moving average. 5. If long, place protective stop below the yearly open and below the 3-month moving average by about 10 ticks. 6. If short, place protective stop above the yearly open and above the 3-month moving average by about 10 ticks. 7. Once profitable by 5%, move stop to break even. 8. Trail the market with your stop by 5%. I trade oil with an option strategy only. Again, I note the yearly opening price, and I do not trade oil until at least April. As with bonds, I record all monthly opens and obtain a 3-month moving average. I look for the same criteria that I look for when trading bonds. I want to buy if the price is above the yearly open and above the 3-month moving average. I want to sell if the reverse is true. If the market is going up, I do not buy calls. I sell puts. Likewise, if the market is going down, I sell calls. I do not buy puts. My sole goal is to make money on premiums. If the strike price of the options is not hit before the expiration date, the premium is mine to take to the bank. Therefore, I want to trade options that are no more than 45 to 60 days out from expiration. I am trading naked options, and there is a great risk involved. The risk, of course, is that the strike price will be hit, and I will be forced to deliver the underlying securities at the strike price. Therefore, I want options that are about $5 or so out of the money. For example, if the current price is $53, I will sell my puts at $48 and my calls at $58. I do not trade oil all of the time. I look for optimum market conditions. Clearly, oil offered possibilities as prices soared in 2004 and 2005. Remember that trading naked options is risky, and I am not recommending that you do so unless you have some experience, understand the market, and have the funds to risk. Checklist for trading oil. 1. Record the yearly opening price. 2. Record monthly opens and create a moving average. 3. If the price is above the yearly open and above the 3-month moving average, sell puts. 4. If the price is below the yearly open and below the 3-month moving average, sell calls. 5. Only sell options that are 45 to 60 days from expiration. I like to trade gold, and I do so a fair amount of the time. I don't like to short gold, but that is not to say that I will not do it if the circumstances are optimum. However, far more often than not, I am a buyer and not a seller in the gold market. I prefer to hold gold longer than I do a lot of other commodities. That is, I like to hold it for anywhere from 2 weeks to 6 months. Like everything else I trade, I begin by recording the yearly opening price. Next, I record each monthly open and create a 65-day moving average chart. My strategy is very simple. If the price of gold is above the yearly open and above the 65-day moving average, I buy. If it is below the yearly open and below the 65-day moving average, I sell. Selling is not my favorite posture, but I listen to the market and the numbers and do as they tell me to do. Once I am in the market, I place a protective stop below the average price for the last 3 monthly opens. My profit goal is $10 to $15 profit per contract. Once that profit target is achieved, I exit enough of my positions to cover any potential loss on my remaining positions, or I exit the trade entirely. Trading gold futures. I use several indicators to help me trade gold. First, I look at the dollar index. There is an inverse correlation between gold and the dollar. Also, I look at bonds. Again, I am looking for an inverse correlation. Checklist for trading gold futures. 1. Record the yearly opening price. 2. Create 65-day moving average. 3. Look for a profit of $10 to $15 per contract. 4. Obtain the opening prices for each month. 5. Place a protective stop below the average price of the last 3 monthly opens. 6. Once the profit target has been achieved, exit all positions, or exit enough of your positions to move your stop to break even and ride the move for the remaining positions. Because I consider myself an expert on trading the index futures, I use that knowledge to trade other vehicles as well. I believe that the S&P index futures can be used very effectively as an indicator for trading a variety of other securities. Over the years, I've used my knowledge of the S&P to help me trade stocks, mutual funds, bonds, and other vehicles. When I trade stocks, I select stocks that move in close correlation to the S&P. Some of the stocks that I trade move in the same direction as the S&P and mirror its action, whereas others move in a contrary direction. By reading the S&P, I am more enlightened about the market and better able to trade stocks. I employ a dual strategy of trading stocks for longer-term investing as well as for short-term day trading. With mutual funds, I focus on diversification and trade both broad-based funds and indexed funds. I select the funds to trade at the beginning of each year. Then I equally allocate my account balance among 8 strong performers. Each quarter, I revisit my selections and close out weak non-performing funds and transfer those assets into the higher performing funds. Finally, by the end of the year, I have only a few funds, but they are my strongest performers. With the end of the year, I go to cash and evaluate. I start the year by identifying 10 high performers, eliminating the top 2 of those, and starting the process again. I trade bond futures, but I do not trade them until at least April. The reason for this delay is that I base my trading decisions on both the yearly opening price and a 3-month moving average. If the price is above the yearly open and that average, I'm a buyer. If it is below those 2 criteria, I am a seller. I, of course, use protective stops, and I always identify my profit targets before I enter the market. I trade commodities, too. 2 of my favorite commodities are oil and gold. I only trade oil using an options strategy. Like my bond futures method, with oil, I also use the yearly opening price and a 3-month moving average to determine my point of entry. The goal of the strategy is to obtain premiums when the options that I have sold expire while they are out of the money. Therefore, I only trade options that are 46 to 60 days from expiration. In a bullish bond market, I sell puts, and if the market is bearish, I sell calls. Again, my objective is to obtain the premiums from selling the options. I sell naked options, and this is risky. Be sure that you have a thorough understanding of all of the risks involved before you do it. I use a slightly different approach to trading gold. I trade gold futures. I prefer taking the long position if the market allows. However, I will short the market if the numbers tell me to do so. As always, I begin with the yearly opening price and go from there. I record all opening prices for 65 days and obtain the moving average. Then, when gold moves above the yearly open and above that 65-day moving average, I'm a buyer. If it moves below those 2 benchmarks, I am a seller. Remember to always do your homework and learn about any market that you trade. Always use stops and know your profit targets. Also, always consider risk first and profit taking second. If you consistently respect the risks of trading, you can learn how to be a winner. Lessons learned. The S&P Futures Index is very important and can be used to help trade other securities. The yearly opening prices of stocks, bonds, and commodities are very important. Record the prices and use it throughout the year. Continuously monitor your mutual fund portfolio and adjust your holdings quarterly as needed. Use a 65-day moving average to help you when trading gold futures. Do your homework and study a market before you trade in it. Know how it moves, identify its key numbers, and locate support and resistance.